All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're tackling something pretty essential for anyone who's hitting the California roads for the first time. We're talking about the California DMV test.
Absolutely, a rite of passage for sure.
We've got a stack of resources here to help us decode the whole process. Most importantly, the Mastering the California DMV Exam book. Our mission here is to sift through all the info and deliver you the absolute must-knows.
Think of this as like your cheat sheet to feeling totally prepped and confident, you know, without getting bogged down in the minutiae. We'll break down the rules of the road, give you some handy tricks to remember them, and hopefully offer insights that make it all click.
Yeah, no one wants to get stuck on some obscure detail that ends up tripping them up on the actual test. So today we're going deep on the real deal breakers. Right of way, managing speed, understanding all those signs and signals, pre-drive checks, those sometimes dreaded maneuvers, what to do in emergencies, and even some test-taking strategies. We're sticking to the gold standard info from our sources here so you know you're getting the real deal. So, ready to jump in?
Let's do it. Let's start with right of way. It's the language of sharing the road, and getting it right is key for safety and passing that test.
Okay, right of way. It can feel like a complicated dance sometimes. Can we break down the basics? Like, what happens when you get to an intersection with no traffic lights, no stop signs, nothing? Who goes first?
So, in those uncontrolled intersections, it's all about yielding to the vehicle on your right. It's not about who got there first. It's about position. Of course, always, always check for any oncoming traffic from both directions before you even think about moving forward. You know, approach with caution. It's like a dance, and in those situations, the person on your right leads.
Got it. So less about who got there first, more about who's in that right spot at that exact moment. What about pedestrians and cyclists? They're more vulnerable.
Absolutely. If there's a pedestrian in a marked crosswalk, they have the ultimate right of way, no matter what. Even if there's no traffic signal, you're legally obligated to yield to them. And with cyclists, same idea. If they're using a marked bike lane as if it were a sidewalk, or if they're following the same traffic signals as cars, you've got to yield to them. Vulnerable road users always come first.
That makes sense. Pedestrians in crosswalks are king, and cyclists following the rules are treated like vehicles. Okay, what about stop signs? Those red octagons, everyone knows. Is it really just about coming to a complete stop, or is there more to it?
There's a bit more nuance. A complete stop means everything stops moving. No rolling stops allowed. At a typical stop sign, the car that gets to the stop line first generally gets to go first. But if two or more cars arrive at the same time, it's back to that yield to the right rule.
So even at a stop sign, if it's a close call, right side has priority. Now, what about those four-way stops?
At a four-way stop, everyone has to come to a complete stop. Whoever stopped first gets to go first. And yep, you guessed it. If it's a tie, yield to the right. The key is predictability and being courteous. And just to be clear, at a two-way stop, only the cars on the road with the stop sign actually have to stop completely. The cross traffic has the right of way.
Important distinction. Okay, now let's talk about yield signs. They seem a little less forceful than a stop sign.
Right. With a yield sign, you have to slow down and be prepared to stop if needed. The big difference is you don't have to come to a full stop if it's clear. But you absolutely must yield to any oncoming traffic that's already in the intersection, pedestrians in crosswalks, and any cars that are turning. It's more about being aware and giving way when you need to.
So it's about judging the situation and yielding when necessary, not always stopping completely. Where else in California might we see this yield situation a lot?
Oh, definitely. When you're merging onto a multi-lane highway from an on-ramp, the cars already cruising on the highway have the right of way. It's your job to yield and smoothly merge in when there's a safe gap. And this is huge. Never stop dead on the on-ramp unless there's an immediate hazard. It's dangerous and disrupts the flow.
Right, got it. Let's try a little real-world scenario here. Imagine you're rolling up to a four-way stop, quiet neighborhood, somewhere in, I don't know, let's say Bakersfield. Two other cars arrive at the intersection just as you do. How do you figure out who goes first?
That's where our tiebreaker rule comes in handy. If you all arrive at the same time, you got to yield to the car on your right. If it's clear you got there first and came to a full stop, you usually get to go. But double check that cross traffic is stopped too. Observation is key.
It really helps to visualize these rules playing out. All right, let's shift gears to another big one. Speed.
Absolutely. Those speed limits aren't suggestions, they're the law. And for good reason. Going over the limit increases your chances of crashing. And if you do crash, the injuries are much worse. But also, going too slow can actually be risky too because it messes with the flow of traffic.
So it's about finding that sweet spot, a speed that's legal and safe.
Right.
But the posted speed limit isn't always the be-all and end-all, right?
Nope, you gotta adapt to the conditions. Think about it. Driving on a bumpy road, hitting potholes, loose gravel, construction zones, all those call for slowing down to stay in control. Same with heavy traffic. You naturally have to go slower. And maybe the most important thing is visibility. When it's dark, foggy, rainy, or anything that makes it harder to see, slow down. Give yourself more time to react.
So speed isn't just about a number on a sign. It's about being aware and adjusting. How can drivers actually put those adjustments into practice? Any specific techniques?
The best thing you can do is be scanning the road ahead constantly. This helps you spot potential problems early, like a pedestrian about to step out or brake lights ahead, and adjust your speed accordingly. The 3-second rule is another lifesaver. You pick a fixed object, like a sign, and count 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000 after the car in front of you passes it. You should reach that same spot no sooner than when you finish counting. In bad weather, or when following bigger vehicles, increase that to 4 or even 5 seconds. And when you do need to slow down, easing off the gas is the best way to do it. It lets the engine help slow you down, which is called engine braking, and avoids jerky movements that can freak out other drivers.
And when we physically need to slow down, easing off the gas is best.
Exactly. It uses the engine's resistance to slow you down gently, which is better for your brakes, too. No sudden braking unless it's a true emergency. Smoothness and gradual changes are key to keeping everyone safe and predictable.
Let's test that knowledge with another California driving scenario. Let's say you're driving on a winding mountain road, maybe somewhere in the Sierras, and the speed limit says 55. But it's pouring rain, visibility is low, and the roads are slick. What adjustments do you make to your speed and following distance?
In that situation, forget about that 55. Slow down significantly. Those wet roads mean your tires have less grip, so braking and steering are much less effective. And double, even triple, your following distance. Instead of 3 seconds, aim for at least 6 to give yourself that extra reaction time. There's a saying, in rain, double your chain. It really emphasizes how important it is to be extra cautious in wet conditions.
Absolutely. Recognizing the road conditions and adjusting is vital. All right, let's talk about the language of the road, signs and signals.
Road signs and signals are the universal language that guides us, warns us, and keeps everything flowing smoothly. Knowing them is a must-have, not just for the task, but for safe driving in general.
Okay, so let's start with the ones that tell us what we have to do. Regulatory signs, what makes them stand out, and what are some common types?
Regulatory signs lay down the law. They often have distinctive shapes, like the round speed limit signs or the octagon stop signs, and they're usually red, white, or black with clear symbols or text. They tell you what you must do or not do. Stop signs, yield signs, speed limit signs, these are the big ones. Ignoring them means tickets and higher risk of accidents.
So these are the non-negotiable rules of the road. What other regulatory signs should we be on the lookout for?
You'll see do not enter signs a lot. Those are red rectangles with white lettering, and they mean exactly what they say. One way signs are usually white rectangles with a black arrow, showing you which way traffic flows. Then there are parking signs. They come in all sorts of shapes and colors, but they all tell you where, when, and for how long you can park. Turn of prohibition signs are often red circles with a white symbol showing the forbidden turn. Lane control signs are usually white rectangles with black arrows or symbols that tell you which lanes to use for certain maneuvers. And don't forget pedestrian crossing signs. They're usually white rectangles with a black walking figure, warning you about crosswalks and reminding you that pedestrians have the right of way.
Okay, that's a good rundown of those regulatory signs. Now, what about those yellow diamond-shaped signs we see so often?
Ah, those are warning signs. They're almost always yellow diamonds with black symbols or text, like heads-up messages, letting you know about potentially dangerous conditions ahead. Unlike regulatory signs, they don't tell you what you must do, but they strongly suggest you adjust your speed and driving accordingly. Think curves in the road, merging traffic, areas where deer cross, things like that. Pay attention to them. They're there for your safety.
So they're basically saying, heads up, something's coming. And then there are the informational signs, which I think are usually green.
Yeah, for the most part. Informational signs are all about giving you guidance. These can include route markers with highway numbers, signs showing distances to cities or exits, and signs pointing out gas stations, restaurants, or rest areas. They help you navigate and plan your trips.
Got it. So we have regulatory signs telling us what to do, warning signs alerting us to danger, and informational signs helping us find our way. Now, what about those lines and markings painted on the road itself?
Road markings are just as important as the signs. Solid lines, whether white or yellow, are boundaries you shouldn't cross. They're usually separate lanes going opposite directions or mark the edges of the road. Dashed lines mean you can change lanes, but only when it's safe. Remember, SMOG, signal, mirrors, over-the-shoulder check, go. And be extra careful around crosswalks. They're marked with solid white lines or those bold zebra stripes and often have pedestrian crossing signs too. Stop lines are thick white lines right before intersections or stop signs telling you where to stop completely. Lane designation markings, like arrows on the pavement, tell you what you can do from a particular lane. And turn lane markings with those painted arrows guide you into the right lane for turning.
So the road itself is giving us constant instructions. Are there any special zones where we need to be extra cautious?
Definitely. School zones are a big one. They're marked with those orange diamond signs with a black schoolhouse symbol, sometimes with flashing yellow lights too. They have lower speed limits, usually in effect when kids are around, like during school hours or when buses are loading and unloading. Be super watchful for kids in those areas. Construction zones are another one. You'll see those orange diamond signs with black construction symbols. They often have reduced speed limits too, and you have to obey flaggers with orange or red flags and hand signals who are directing traffic. Watch out for cones. Orange ones usually mean danger, white ones often mark lanes or walkways, and blue ones might indicate parking restrictions or utility work. And lastly, watch out for hazardous materials zones marked with orange diamond signs with the hazard symbol. Extra caution is needed there.
So, different zones, different rules, and always be alert. Let's try another scenario. You're driving in California and you see a flashing yellow light above a school zone sign and it's during school hours. What does that flashing light tell you and what should you do?
That flashing yellow light is basically a super heads up. It means the school zone speed limit is in effect and you need to be super careful because kids could be around. Immediately slow down to the posted speed limit and be super vigilant for pedestrians, especially little ones. Remember, keeping students safe is the absolute priority in school zones.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, let's talk about something important that happens before you even put the car in drive, those pre-drive checks.
Pre-drive checks are a must-do, not just for the test, but for your own safety, the safety of others, and to prevent those frustrating breakdowns.
Where do we even start with these checks? What's the first thing we should be looking at?
Let's start with the foundation. Your tires. You need to check each one for proper inflation. Don't just eyeball them, look closely. A tire that looks sunken on the sides means it's underinflated, while one that's bulging outwards is overinflated. Then check the tread wear. The penny test is a handy trick. Take a penny and stick it upside down in the tire's tread. If you can see the top of Lincoln's head, your tread is probably too low and you need a new tire. Your owner's manual will have the exact minimum tread depth that you need. While you're at it, check the tire's sidewalls and tread for cuts, bulges, or cracks. Any of those can compromise the tire's integrity. It's also a good idea to use a tire pressure gauge to get an accurate reading and compare it to the PSI, pounds per square inch, recommended for your car, which is usually on a sticker in the driver's side door jamb or in your owner's manual. Check the pressure when the tires are cold for the most accurate reading.
The penny test, love that one. It's easy to remember and do. What's next on our pre-drive checklist?
Lights. Turn your car's ignition to the accessory position or start the engine and systematically check every single exterior light. Headlights, high beams and low beams. Taillights, brake lights. You might need somebody to help you with this one. Turn signals, front and the rear, and hazard lights. If a light seems much dimmer than usual or doesn't come on at all, the bulb is probably dying or dead. Replace it ASAP. And remember, misaligned headlights can be dangerous too, so while a quick check is good, it's worth getting your headlights professionally aligned every now and then.
Good point about those brake lights. What about the fluids that keep the car running smoothly and prevent overheating?
Absolutely. First, find your engine oil dipstick. Your owner's manual will show you where it is. Pull it out, wipe it clean, push it back in all the way, and then pull it out again to check the oil level. It should be between the min and max or add and full lines, and ideally it should be amber in color. If it's dark brown or gritty, it's probably time for an oil change. Next, find the windshield washer fluid reservoir, which is usually a see-through container with a windshield wiper symbol on it. Top it off with the correct fluid if it's low. Lastly, find the coolant reservoir again. Your owner's manual is your friend here. Check that the coolant level is between the min and max lines. Healthy coolant is usually bright green, orange, or yellow. If it looks brownish or rusty, your cooling system might need some attention.
All right, so we've covered tires, lights, and fluids. What else is crucial in our pre-drive routine?
Mirrors, mirrors, mirrors. They're your lifeline for knowing what's going on around you. Start with your rear view mirror. Adjust it so you have a clear view of the traffic behind you through the rear window. Then move on to your side mirrors. The goal is to minimize those pesky blind spots. Adjust each side mirror outwards until you can just barely see the side of your car in the inner edge. This gives you the widest view of the lanes next to you. But remember, blind spots still exist even with perfect mirror adjustment, so always turn your head and do a quick shoulder check before changing lanes or merging.
Makes sense. See and be seen. And before we set off, it's a good idea to check our brakes too, right?
Definitely a good habit to get into. At a very slow speed in a safe place like an empty parking lot, gently apply your brakes. Listen for any weird noises like grinding or squealing. Those could mean your brake pads or rotors are worn. The pedal should feel firm when you press it. A soft or spongy feeling could mean air in the brake lines, which is a safety hazard. You could also try to peek through your wheels to see if the brake pads and rotors look excessively worn.
Now, during your actual DMV test, the examiner will probably ask you to point out and demonstrate some of these things. What specifically should you be ready to show them?
Oh, they'll definitely want to see that you know your car. Be ready to show them your driver's side window and prove it opens and closes all the way. They'll check your windshield to make sure it's not cracked or obstructed. They'll want to see the windshield wipers work. They'll have you honk the horn to check that it's loud enough, but not a silly or super loud horn. You'll have to demonstrate the parking brake, making sure it holds the car and releases properly. Headlights, high beams and low beams, taillights, brake lights, and turn signals. They'll want to see that those are all working too. They'll also check your tires to make sure they have at least 1/32 of an inch of tread depth in two adjacent grooves and that there are no bald spots or damage. And be ready to explain how you adjust your mirrors to minimize blind spots and demonstrate the proper way to wear your seatbelt, shoulder belt across your chest, not on your neck or arm, and lap belt low and tight across your hips, not your stomach.
So it's not just about knowing how to drive, but also about understanding your car and making sure it's safe. Okay, let's move on to the part of the test where you actually get behind the wheel, those driving maneuvers.
Yes, the maneuvers. Getting these down pat isn't just about passing the test. It's about becoming a confident and safe driver on the road.
All right, let's start with the basic steering. What's the best way to hold the steering wheel and any tips for smooth steering?
The most common recommendations for hand position are either 9 3 o'clock or 10 2. These positions give you the best leverage and let you react quickly if you need to. Hold the wheel firmly but relaxed, not too tight. Imagine holding a baby bird you want to be firm but not crush it. Your steering should always be smooth, gradual, and controlled. Scan the road ahead and start steering before you get to the turn or curve. Adjust how much you turn the wheel depending on the sharpness of the turn. Tight corners need more turning than gentle curves. And watch out for oversteering. That's when you turn the wheel too sharply and risk losing control. If your car starts to skid, ease off the steering a bit to let the tires regain their grip.
Okay, so smooth and steady wins the race. Now, what about in a skid situation? Is there anything you should do then?
When you find yourself skidding, the key is to stay calm and avoid sudden movements. There are two main types of skids, understeer and oversteer. Understeer is when the front tires lose grip and the car keeps going straight, even though you're turning the wheel. In that case, gently ease off the gas. This often helps the front tires regain traction, and then you can gently steer in the direction you want to go. Oversteer is when the rear tires lose grip and the back end of the car swings out. The trick here is to countersteer, which means quickly and smoothly turning the wheel in the same direction that the back of the car is skidding. As the car starts to straighten out, gently straighten the steering wheel to avoid overcorrecting. Skid control is a skill best practiced in a safe environment, like a skid pad. It's not something you'll be tested on for your permit, but it's good to know.
So stay calm and steer into the skid. That sounds counterintuitive. What about emergency braking? How do we do that correctly?
If you need to slam on the brakes, the key is firm, steady pressure. Don't slam the pedal or pump it repeatedly unless your car doesn't have ABS. If you do have ABS, you'll feel a pulsing in the brake pedal when you press down firmly. Keep that pressure steady. ABS is preventing your wheels from locking up so you can still steer while braking hard. Remember that your stopping distance, the distance your car travels from when you first see a hazard to when you come to a complete stop, depends on a few things. Your reaction time, your car's braking ability, and the condition of the road. Practicing emergency braking in a safe, controlled area can help you build muscle memory and understand how your car brakes.
So steady pressure for ABS and understand what affects stopping distance. All right, what about when we see emergency vehicles with lights flashing and sirens blaring?
When those lights and sirens are coming at you, the law is clear. Immediately pull over to the right as far as you can safely go and come to a complete stop. On multi-lane roads, move into the rightmost lane before stopping. Never stop in the middle of the road or in an intersection. Once you've stopped, it's a good idea to turn on your hazard lights to be extra visible. Stay put until the emergency vehicle and any others that are with it have passed you by a safe distance. You should be able to see them in your rearview mirror before you start driving again.
Right, giving way to emergency vehicles a no-brainer. We also have to share the road with those big rigs, trucks, and buses. What should we keep in mind when we're around those?
Large trucks and buses have huge blind spots on their sides and directly behind them. Never hang out in those nose zones where the driver can't see you. Keep a much bigger following distance behind them than you would with a regular car because they take longer to stop. When you need to pass one, make sure you have tons of space and clear visibility, pass swiftly on the left, and get back into the right lane as soon as it's safe. Also, remember that trucks and buses need a wider turning radius, especially when turning right. They often have to swing wide to make the turn. And don't forget about motorcycles. They're smaller and harder to see, so be extra careful. Check your mirrors frequently and keep a safe distance. By the way, in California, motorcycles have to have their headlights on all the time, day or night, to make them more visible.
Longer stopping distances, bigger blind spots, and wider turns, all good things to remember when sharing the road with big vehicles. Okay, last one on this topic. What do you do when you see a stopped school bus with its red lights flashing and stop arm out?
That's a hard stop. In California, it's against the law and incredibly dangerous to pass a school bus that's stopped and has those flashing red lights and the stop arm extended. It means kids are getting on or off the bus.
Right.
You have to stop completely before reaching the bus and wait until the lights stop flashing and the stop arm is retracted. This rule is all about keeping kids safe because you never know what they might do around a bus.
Absolutely. Safety first. Let's run through that tire blowout situation again just to make sure it's crystal clear. Say you're on a busy California freeway and suddenly you have a blowout. What do you do?
Okay, so first things first, don't panic. Hold the steering wheel tight with both hands to keep control as the car might pull to one side. Gently ease off the gas. Don't slam on the brakes. That could make you lose control completely. Steer carefully to keep moving straight ahead. Look for the nearest safe spot to pull off the freeway, a wide shoulder, or an emergency stopping area. Once you've spotted a good spot, signal that you're moving to the shoulder and gently steer off the freeway. As soon as you're fully stopped on the shoulder, put on your parking brake and turn on your hazard lights to warn other drivers. Only once you're safely stopped should you start thinking about changing the tire, using those steps we talked about earlier. Remember, the priority is to get your car safely off the road and to a complete stop.
Perfect. Okay, we've covered a ton of ground here, but knowing the material is only half the battle. Let's talk about some strategies for actually taking the DMV test.
Right. Having a good game plan can make all the difference in feeling confident and scoring well on the written test.
So first off, how do we manage those test day jitters and stay calm and focused?
The best way to beat test anxiety is preparation, preparation, preparation. Start studying early, get a good night's sleep before the test, and try relaxation techniques like deep breathing. If you start to feel those nerves creeping in, take a moment to pause, take a few slow, deep breaths, or even picture a calming image to help you recenter.
Preparation and staying calm makes sense. What about managing our time during the test? Any tips there?
Before you dive into the questions, take a quick look at the test format to get a feel for the types of questions and how they're laid out. Come up with a plan for how you'll use your time, remembering that some questions might need more thought than others. If a question really stumps you, don't get hung up on it. Mark it and move on. You can always come back to it if you have time at the end. It's generally better to tackle the easy ones first and get those points secured. Don't rush through the test, but also keep an eye on the clock. Accuracy matters more than speed.
Accuracy over speed, got it. Any advice for tackling those multiple choice questions and avoiding common traps?
If you finish early, always, always proofread your answers before turning in your test. Misreading a question is a classic mistake, so take your time and really understand what they're asking. Pay attention to every detail on the answers. Choices, even one word, can change the meaning completely. Don't just skim. Read each option thoroughly. And again, remember that being accurate is more important than finishing fast.
What happens if, even with all this prep, we don't pass on the first try?
Don't beat yourself up. It happens. Plenty of people need a second attempt, and it's a chance to learn and grow. go back and really study the areas where you struggled. Use your textbook, listen to this deep dive again, really reinforce those concepts. Do more practice tests to pinpoint any weak spots. The better prepared you are, the more confident you'll feel in your next attempt.
So it's all a learning process. Any final words of wisdom specifically for acing those DMV practice tests?
One thing to remember is that the DMV loves to use answer choices that sound very similar to each other to trick you. So read each question carefully, paying attention to all the key words and the specific situation they describe. If an answer choice goes against safe driving or the law, you can toss it out right away. Try to figure out what the question is, really testing what's the underlying rule or concept. Then compare the remaining choices and pick the one that best fits that concept and emphasizes safe and defensive driving. If you're stuck, use the process of elimination to get rid of the definitely wrong answers. The more practice tests you take, the better you'll get at spotting patterns in the questions and the right kinds of answers.
Great advice. Well, listeners, you've just completed a deep dive into the must-knows for your California DMV permit test.
Remember that understanding these rules and practicing safe driving habits will not only help you pass, but make you a more confident and responsible driver on California's roads.
We strongly encourage you to revisit that Mastering the California DMV exam book and give this deep dive another listen, especially if there are any areas you want to brush up on.
Take some time to really think about those real-world driving scenarios we talked about and how these rules apply in everyday driving situations.
And as you continue your studies, keep asking questions. If something pops up, be proactive and find the answers in your study materials.
Best of luck to you all as you prepare for your California GMV permit test and set off on your driving journey.
Drive safe, everyone.